Très bien. Écoutez, merci d'être ici avec nous aujourd'hui pour ce nouveau cycle de conférences 2007-2008. Vous avez remarqué que ce cycle de conférences porte sur les questions de sécurité. Vous aurez remarqué aussi, en lisant attentivement les 6 conférences prévues, que ces 6 conférences couvrent les 3 axes de recherche du CRDP. Droit, nouveaux rapports sociaux, technologie de l'information et du commerce et des communications, commerce électronique, etc. Et les questions de biotechnologie, rapport au milieu, questions sanitaires, questions de santé, etc. Alors la sécurité est un thème très prégnant aujourd'hui dans les sociétés contemporaines. C'est le pendant du risque. On veut toujours diminuer les risques, assurer une sécurité la plus grande, même si ça peut être des fois tout à fait illusoire, mais bon. C'est un objectif qu'on se fixe. Alors je suis très heureux d'accueillir aujourd'hui pour ouvrir le bal. We are very happy to receive today Professor Paul Latimer d'Australie. Professeur Latimer est un barrister at law de New South Wales et Victoria.
Ah, c'est moi.
Oui. Oh, là, c'est bien. C'est bien, Paul Latimer, yeah. Et Paul Latimer, Paul est aussi associate professor at Monash University, Faculty of Business and Economics. Il a dirigé d'ailleurs le département de Business Law and Taxation à Monash. Il enseigne le droit commercial et le droit des valeurs mobilières et des produits dérivés au programme de premier cycle et au programme de MBA. Paul a également, avant d'enseigner, travaillé pour l'Australian Securities and Investment Commission. Il travaille également au bureau du procureur général de l'Australie à Canberra. Et il a enseigné, il était professeur invité dans plusieurs universités à Columbia, à Louvain, à Cambridge, en Malaisie, et à l'Université Laval à Québec, à Nice aussi en France. Et nous sommes très heureux de le recevoir cette année à Montréal. Alors, la conférence aura lieu en anglais, mais Paul comprend très bien le français. Alors, si vous voulez poser des questions en français par la suite, ben, vous serez les bienvenus. Voilà, merci beaucoup.
Merci bon, bien.
Thank you very much.
Bonjour. Grand merci pour l'invitation cet après-midi présenter cette conférence. Pour moi, c'est ma deuxième fois ici au Québec. J'ai passé mon sabbatique pendant l'automne 2000 à l'Université Laval. J'ai appris le français un peu à Laval, en Belgique, en France aussi un peu, aussi en Australie. Mon champ d'études est les marchés financiers. J'ai vu dans l'annonce les différents sens du mot « security ». Pour moi, c'est le mot « security » avec les investissements. Je voudrais commencer avec les comparaisons entre le Canada et l'Australie. J'ai trouvé cette website de l'ambassade de l'Australie qui s'appelle Canada en Australie. Le Canada en Australie. Il y a beaucoup de connexions entre les deux pays. Pendant les années 19e siècle, il y avait beaucoup de connexions, l'explorateur, les mineurs d'or, gold miners par exemple. Et mon premier page, j'ai petit tableau. Maintenant, je vous ai dit, si vous n'avez d'autres objection. Maintenant, je vais retourner à ma langue maternelle, mais il est possible pour moi d'utiliser les phrases françaises de temps en temps. Je voudrais commencer avec les différences. Population ici au Canada, 33 millions. En Australie, seulement 20 millions. Les deux pays sont fédérations. National Business Regulation. D'autre part, je pense qu'il y a un peu de National Business Regulation au Canada. En Australie, c'est normal. National Business Regulation de notre capitale nationale à Canberra. 10 provinces et 3 territoires ici au Canada. En Australie, 6 États. et de territoire fédéral. Y a-t-il une personne qui connaît le nom de les territoires fédéraux en Australie? Australian Capital Territory. La capitale nationale se trouve à l'Australian Capital Territory. Et le deuxième territoire, c'est le Northern Territory. La capitale est Darwin, une ville tropicale, une ville qui se trouve seulement une heure de l'Indonésie, à le nord de l'Australie, Northern Territory, et six États. Le best known, je pense, pour les Australiens, le best known, il est les Rocheux. Absolument, il est bien connu, les Rocheux canadiens. Je pense pour les étrangers, en Australie, le bien connu, c'est la ville de Sydney, le Sydney Opera House, le pont de Sydney, qui s'appelle le Sydney Harbour Bridge. À Brisbane, il y a un pont, le pont de Brisbane, qui est une copie de Jacques Cartier. Une copie exactement comme ça. Sur le site web, il y a une copie de le bridge qui était appelé Montreal Harbour Bridge. C'est le vieux nom de Jacques Cartier. Hein? Et le bridge, Story Bridge à Brisbane, une copie exacte. Avec deux points. Oui.
Deux arches.
Deux arches. Il est bizarre que les deux pays, le souverain, Elizabeth II, Queen du Canada et Queen de l'Australie, la Reine de l'Australie. Nous avons aussi, je connais le Molson ad. We are Canadian. We have a Governor General, not a President. Pour nous, c'est la même chose. Nous avons un Governor General, not a President. We have a Prime Minister, not a President. For you and for us, it's the same. Michel Jean. For us, it's a retired military, a Major General. It sounds so old-fashioned. He is old-fashioned. A Major General, as a Governor General. We have a Prime Minister, a Conservateur. Election pendant quelques semaines, et on maintenant on prédicte un change de gouvernement, de conservateur, laboriste, travailleur, labour. And the most famous, Pierre Trudeau, bien connu en Australie. On m'a dit qu'il n'est pas très populaire au Québec, parce qu'il est fédéraliste, ça. Fédéraliste. Sydney Opera House, did you know that Rupert Murdoch, il est australien, Rupert Murdoch. Il parle avec accent australien. Yes, he does. And James Wolfensohn, l'ancien leader de World Bank, aussi est australien. Il est gradué de mon école de droit, Sydney Law School, James Wolfensohn. We know Conrad Black. Maybe I should say ex-Lord Black, is it?
Ex-Canadian also.
Ex-Canadian and ex-Canadian and is it ex-Lord soon?
Yeah, also, yeah.
Maybe. Jim Carrey we like. And did you know, Jay, isn't Wikipedia terrific to get these quick answers? Wikipedia, famous Canadians. J.K. Galbraith, I didn't know that. J.K. Galbraith. Famous Quebecers, I don't know. Internationally known, obviously Trudeau. Oh, Céline, of course. Oh, absolutely, Céline, for sure. Also, I should say, Cirque du Soleil, bien connu aussi en Australie. Il visite chaque deuxième an Cirque du Soleil en Australie. Avec le drapeau du Québec, sur le tent, à Melbourne. Le drapeau du Québec, sur le tent. C'est le temps à Sydney, dans tous les capitaux australiens, le drapeau du Québec. Now, security. I'll stick here. So, it's Canada, Australia. So, my second page. This session is on the word security. Le mot sécurité en français et aussi en anglais vient d'une source commune, c'est la langue latine. In English, security has many meanings, and I appreciate the conferences, the seminars in the future, look at security, international security, terrorism, health security. I'm a commercial lawyer, and my area is mon champ de spécialité, c'est marché financier. Security also has a meaning for commercial law and business law, business regulation. But in English, security in commercial law has two meanings. First of all, we have this page here. Security comes from Middle English, from Old French, from Latin. They say that English is a language that has absorbed many languages. There's no pure English. They say it's a bastard language, don't they? It's German and Danish and Vikings, American now, menacing English. La langue est menacée par l'américain. It is. And aussi langue française. But English, the word security for us has this Latin origin. And the Latin is not from Julius Caesar, it's Latin from French. I checked my dictionary. It says from Old French, which is before 1300. Isn't it interesting how English law words come from the French language, 1066? Quebec talks about la conquête. So do we. There is la conquête in the 1166 with the French language, which we remember today as law words, avocat, contract, negligence, cour, jury, and so on. All these law words are French. All these government words, parlement, what's some other? Cabinet. All these government words.
Chamber.
Yeah, de chambre, oui. All these government words are French. From 1068.
Yeah.
And the third class of French words that we use all the time. All les morts militaires. Lieutenant, corporal, corps, sortie.
Major, général.
Excuse me, but I do this with my students all the time. Where do these words come from? These are the words of the conquest. 1066. I know Quebec talks about the conquest. 1759 is the 11th of September. I mean, we've all had conquests. So the conquest of English was big. So the word security was through the conquest in 1066. In commercial law, security is with us today. It's on page 3. Two meanings. Security, meaning a mortgage. And isn't that interesting, that the idea of a mortgage until death, jusqu'à mort, mortgage, a security. I lend you money, you give me a mortgage as security. So we in English we talk about a mortgage over land, which has nothing to do with the second meaning, and it's a separate meaning, to secure an obligation. And that is a share, that is an avertissement. So first meaning of security in English is a security to guarantee the payment of a debt, a mortgage over real estate, to guarantee an obligation is fulfilled, mortgage or pledge. And I think it's securité bancaire. And the second meaning is developed through American English, and that is securities meaning investments. And I found these in the Oxford English Dictionary, OED, Dictionnaire Oxford, and it goes back as far as 1848, security in the context that I want to talk about. He who buys from the state what are called government securities. There's an obligation of the government to pay a certain amount. So you're giving your money, this is a bond, you're buying Hydro-Quebec securities. Do they exist? Hydro-Quebec bonds. And there is a security that they will pay you income and they will repay your money. Interesting, goes back to 1848, and these other, the Oxford Dictionary is great with to find all these historical examples. So 1848, 1872, and it's the development of this, what really seems like an Americanism now, security meaning shares and investments. And there's 1979. I'm a securities analyst. Page 4 is, it is so easy with the internet to dig up the Quebec versions of securities regulation, the Loi sur les valeurs mobilières and the Securities Act. They're not on the same page. I had to cut and copy from the English version and find the French version, but they weren't together. So this is my own handiwork here, to do the two columns. So for me it's a shortcut. But I've also found Wikipedia Francais très utile. Pour cette explanation, une valeur mobilière, un titre financier, un titre de propriété. It's all about standardization. I don't know if it's a French word or an English word. English is spelled with a Z or a Z. I think standardization. And they keep stressing le même montant nominal, le même coupon, le même ligne en bourse. So we say that securities traded on financial markets are standardized. One Bombardier share is the same as one other Bombardier share. And they are issued on the primary market and they're traded on the secondary market. So we have standardisation and then also dématérialisation. My students love these words. And also give them I don't do the French, fake French accent. Disintermédiation. Disintermediation. Does that exist in French? Disintermédiation.
C'est très dur à dire, mais oui.
Oui. Well, that's a guess. I don't even know. So if it's disintermédiation, and the question is there a future for you call them courtier? Courtier. Stockbrokers.
Courtier.
I don't think the word exists in France, does it?
Courtier, I think.
C'est un mot juridique, un mot français, courtier. But anyway, so we have standardisation, dématérialisation, aussi disintermédiation, and that's where securities reg is at the moment. What's going to happen in the future? We have now shares without paper. We have shares that are all the same. We have shares without paper. And is there a future for the industry? Who needs people? If we're clicking away at TD Waterhouse, $7 a trade. It used to be $100 a trade. And I see on TV, TD Waterhouse. Mm-hmm. TD Waterhouse, is that a big firm?
Yeah.
$7
yeah.
a time. Who needs stockbrokers? So my page 4 then is... just to check here where securities are going. Securities meaning investissement and shares. I just copied from Wikipedia Francais quelques phrases au sujet de l'heure des matérialisations. I'm sure in Quebec it's the same because shares are going, have gone paper free, have gone dematerialised. It raises issues of certainty of law, evidence, paper, proof, and we are relying upon this, aren't we, to say that this is my life savings, disintermediated in the computer. Securities reg has something for everybody. If you don't know anything about securities reg, it includes electronic commerce, it includes administrative law, and the role of the Securities Commission, the Commission on the Valeur. It includes constitutional law, a big issue in countries like Canada and Australia, where the securities reg is federal or province. It includes criminal law, includes property law. And I say to my colleagues, some of my colleagues say, security's reg, how boring. But no way, this is something for everybody. It's admin, it's crime, it's government, it's federal, it's constitution, it's everything. And we're all investors. And in these first world economies, about 50% of people own shares. Directly or indirectly, 50%. Cinq comptes per cent. It's too important to say this is an area of specialty. So I downloaded chapitre, is it cinq? I don't know, is it cinq? Chapter 511. Huh? And on page 5. It's very interesting to see what is covered by securities. What I would say is what is not a security. So, for example, is a franchise a security in this country? Being like a McDonald's franchise or, the Second Cup. Is that a security or is that just a private contract? I'm asking you, actually. Is a Second Cup a franchise? If it's a franchise, is it regulated as a security or not? Because this chapitre premier, it says what are securities. It doesn't say what are not securities. So I would ask, is a McDonald's, a Tim Hortons franchise? I guess it's not. I think they're direct contracts. Not security? In my country, they're not.
It wouldn't pass the
But do they have a list of exclusions, or they just have what are securities?
You have in section 1 you have
what's in?
Section 1 what's in, and then you have exemptions.
Yep.
But franchises are not listed as exemptions, but they would fail the investment contract definition test.
Yeah, well, this is global. Investment contract, managed fund, collective investment. So franchise would be one of the ones to make this interesting. Franchise. What about... we have timeshares. In fact, Accor de France. It's probably big here as well.
The hotel chain.
Yeah. Accor, they call Accor all the time. They're a pest.
Mm-hmm.
They call all the time with timeshare. Francais de Saint Paul, timeshare. You say timeshare in French?
Timeshare.
C'est anglicisme à matière de dire, timeshare.
Yeah, well.
So Accor in Australia, you'll see, I must get a call once a month.
Oh.
And offering timeshares to stay in Bali for 1 week.
Mm.
And they say, you come to our presentation, you get three free nights. Yeah, you got to work for it. But so we would say also, a timeshare is not a security because it's a direct contract. So franchise, out. Timeshare, out. What about partnership interest? Like, for example, we have racehorses. You can buy a share in a racehorse. 1/10 of a racehorse. On a market that people, investors in racehorses, know all about. And we say that a share in a racehorse, that's exempted. What about a retirement village? It's possible with a retirement village. Here as well. For the elderly. To live, to pay a fee to live, but not to own. And maybe a retirement village is a managed fund, a collective investment. It's not on a public market. So all I'm saying is that security and what you might call the outer circle is interesting, and I think it's very political. And my students say, why isn't the retirement village regulated by the commission? And I say, there has not yet been a scandal. It's political. We are waiting for a boom and a bust and an investigation and then some new regulation. It hasn't happened yet. So when it comes to all this lawmaking, there's always boom, everybody's in. Then it collapses. Then there's a commission, Commission Royale,
uh-huh.
Or Commission Gouvernementale.
Oh, yeah.
And then it will make a recommendation, which usually means new law. So we have these, I think a franchise might come in sometime in the future, once there is a boom and a bust. It hasn't happened yet. And governments don't. Governments are reactive, not proactive. Mm. So we don't have the reaction yet. Both countries, yours and mine, have pretty much the same definition of what is a security. Page 4 I found very interesting. Page 6. This is securities markets. Now this is me on the other side of the world clicking away at these different sites. We can leave this here right now. And I found on one of the sites that said the market capitalisation is Ontario 41%, Alberta 26%, Quebec 11%, BC 8%. And a mathematician here will say that's not 100%. And I'm assuming must be smaller markets. The market capitalisation in Canada seems to be mostly Ontario, mostly Alberta. And that comes to 86%. What's the other 14? It must be some other markets. But interesting that Toronto Stock Exchange, Boston Montreal, TSX Venture Exchange being the second market. And I discovered recently something called CNQ. Is that, do you think that's CNQ?
Microcap.
Is it doing well, expanding?
Any stocks. So you'd probably not want to trade in those securities unless you're an insider.
Well, I'll talk about insider trading. Insider trading is great for insiders, but it is so bad for the reputation. That's the thing, is it destroys the reputation. And Canada with 13 commissions. Now I just extracted, they all got beautiful logos. I've never understood, and Isol will tell me if these are copyright. Is this breach of copyright putting these? Is it breach of copyright to do this or not?
Well, you could say that you are in an educational context.
Yeah, because there would have been 13 different logos. I just chose. I thought that Northwest Territories was the most memorable. It was great, isn't it? But look at the Australian one. I take some pride here because this is one country. And so we have the little state of Tasmania. Population 400,000. Now you say that, all that gets forgotten. It's a little island at the south of Australia. So Tasmania, this is a beautiful logo, Tasmania. That's probably Queensland, probably Western Australia. But it's not completely accurate, but six states in one logo, we think it's great. Australian Securities Investments Commission. There's one regulator. We don't do any of this. So the L'Autorité des Marchés Financiers here in Quebec. I'm a guest in your country, so it's not for me to say. Federal or state, except to say we were the same as this up until 1982. So up until 1982, the Australian situation was six states, six commissions, six stock exchanges, rivals, ZT. They cooperated. They cooperated the same as Canada cooperates with the Autorité Canadienne of l'Immobilier. This is great, a great coordination, but there is still no one-stop shop. And we say that in our federation, the one-stop shop is unique. The Americans can't do it either. The SEC is for secondary markets and issuing, but there are still 50 commissions from Maryland and California and Hawaii for incorporation. So our one-stop shop is incorporation, that's primary market, and it is the secondary market. Why did six exchanges come together? They came together because they said that we're irrelevant globally. Who's ever heard of Perth Stock Exchange? Who cares? You know, tiny place. In a state with 1 million people. So the six exchanges down under they all go back to the 1860s. They all had their own history, and their own regional history, and their own regional focus. But they thought they were becoming irrelevant in the globalisation. So a decision was made to come together in 1987 as one exchange. And then the big step was 10 years later to go public and to issue shares. This is very common now with New York and London and Toronto, exchange issuing shares in itself. When Australian Stock Exchange shares were issued in 98, they started trading at about $4. And it went 4, 5, 6, 7, it went about $8 in a couple of days. And the commission said, what's happened? Is the market fully informed? Suspend trading. Answer the question for us. They opened at 4 and they're now trading at 8. Great money for insiders here. But what non-disclosure is there? And ASX said, we don't know. We are one of the first in the world to be issuing shares in a stock exchange, and we had no models to base it on. Okay, so the shares were suspension listed, and they've gone from $4 to about $50 in less than 10 years. So all I want to say about page 7 is that it's interesting, regulation of securities, regulation of securities market in a federation, and the comparison between the Canadian Federation, say the US Federation, where it's federal, but with state commissions, and the Canadian Federation. I think the Canadian, the heritage is different. The Canadian Federation in 1867 was one of many steps going through to the tenure of Newfoundland in 1949. For us, Federation was 1900, one hit, all at the same time, with the same purpose, same high hopes, and, if you like, suppressing state rivalité in 1900 to say we're national from now on. But Canada with different history. Alberta didn't even exist in 1867. Nope. I think he joined about 1905, something like that.
Something like that.
The federal history is different. Different cultures, different traditions, and they've all joined the Canadian Federation at different times. For us, it was 1900, it was done in one hit. Mm-hmm. We had no transport in 1900. To go from Sydney to Melbourne would have been a once-in-a-lifetime journey by ship. Not quite right. The first railway had gone through, but that would have been, it would have taken 2 or 3 days to do. That was 1890s. But really, at the time of Federation, there was no national feeling. To go to Sydney-Melbourne was a once-in-a-lifetime journey. Today, it's a few hours. A few dollars. Nothing. It's a few dollars. So, the aims of securities reg on page 7. And we go back to the comparisons between the two jurisdictions. This is interesting that Peter Deuxième and the two columns, and I could match it almost word for word with the Australian section, because it is saying that regulation of securities markets is here to make business better. And this is the question. We're here from the government and we're here to make business better. Because securities market regulation is the issue of how to do it best. Should regulation be, on page 9, should it be by government regulation? Should regulation be government? Should it be by cooperation? Should it be self-regulation? Or what about no regulation? So this is where securities reg meets economics. What's the best way to regulate financial markets? Talking about government regulation, we just remember the USSR. Soviet Union, command economy, government regulation. Can governments read the market best? So we have one model, government regulation. We have another model, self-regulation. And all these stock exchanges, Canada, US, Australia, all the stock exchanges originally started up as private clubs by stockbrokers. And private clubs wrote their own rules. And the private clubs wrote their own rules up until the modern time. Up until, in fact, up until for us, up until 1982, stock exchanges wrote their own rules. We've inherited a word from the Philippines, and that's the word cronyism. President Marcos and the different Philippines leaders seem to be specialising in cronyism and deals for themselves. Cronyism and self-regulation seem to go together, because you can't regulate yourself. And you can't regulate your business associates. You can't regulate people and do business with them. So you're going to have light regulation, regulation light. You're going to have deals and special deals and arrangements, because you have to maintain good contact with your industry. The history of self-regulation is that it is great for expertise, but it is no good for independence. And that's why first world economies around the world have said no to self-reg. But how do you capture the benefits of self-regulation? The benefit of self-reg is expertise. That we do it, we know how the market works, we are the experts. So the global model now is what is called co-regulation. And here in Canada as well, but the co-regulation between the various commissions and the financial markets, the bourse, the stock exchanges. How about leaving markets completely unregulated, a market with no regulation? And I've answered what I could ask as a question in 3.3 is what about an unregulated market? And the best example is the market for illegal drugs, which has no government standard. I'm not here promoting heroin, but the market for heroin is unregulated. So drug addicts die from overdoses. There's no contents on the side of it's coming packets, though. There's nothing about contents. So what do you know about standard of heroin? So people die of overdose. What about financial markets and competition? I'm sure there's price fixing, cartels, monopolies, all the worst things happening with the drug market. And then you compare it to Switzerland and Scandinavian countries where drugs are regulated, purity, rehabilitation, education. Not penalising and punishing, but trying to rehabilitate and fix. So a market of no regulation, 3.3, there might be an attraction to let the market run free, but the downside is standards, impurities, criminal activity, cartels, offer you can't refuse. So when it comes to the market for securities, investments, the global model is co-regulation here and other first world countries. Now, legal structure. This is a big change because I'm sure the Toronto Stock Exchange and Bourse de Montréal was originally set up privately by a courtier, by themselves, to provide a facility. And this is what's happened over the last generation, that these self-managing markets have lost. They've lost out to government intervention. But how do you make government intervention work? With my own country, the stock exchange has lost their credibility through booms and busts and not taking action, evidence of cronyism, evidence of insider deals, evidence of weak enforcement, and loss of confidence in the ability to self-regulate. So we go through to co-regulation with the role of a commission and the role of exchange. Now, in Canada, these different commissions here are the ones that issue the license. But on page 9, I've used this as an exam question from time to time. I must have got become interested in Celine and the things at Quebec Law after my time at Laval, because I used Montreal a couple of years in the course. Students probably thought, Montreal, what's that? You know, they've never heard of it. So, but they did know about it after using this question. What's the answer in reverse? Could the Sydney Futures Exchange set up a branch in Montreal? Is there any government protection for Bourse de Montréal? This actually is a real question. I would guess the answer. So my question here, could the Bourse de Montréal set up a market in Australia? The answer for us is yes. They would be welcomed. Because Sydney Futures Exchange no longer has any government protection. ASX, no, it is a commercial company. Has no government status, apart from a government license. And in fact, there is currently talk of a second stock exchange proposed for Australia, half owned by New Zealand, can you believe? I know. In fact, my financial advisor has said, Paul, those stock exchange shares you own, which are now worth $50, get rid of them. The run is over, because there is talk of a second exchange proposed and it'll lose its de facto monopoly. So the answer for question number one is, could the Bourse de Montréal set up a branch in Australia? The answer is yes. And there are probably two that would need a license issued by the Commission. The same as an exchange would need a license here, so it would need a license. And two other things. The Commission has to be satisfied that so they need a license, but the Commission will accept the regulation in the home country. So our commission would say, Quebec regulation, what's that like? Is it equal to Australia? And the answer, of course, is yes. We have the law here, all the sections are the same. So they would want equivalent regulation, and they would want, thirdly, cooperation. Can we be sure that Quebec, the Bourse de Montréal, would cooperate with the Australian Commission? And if yes, we will accept home regulation as equal. So we have several foreign exchanges licensed in Australia, German exchange and other European exchanges, because the Australian Commission is satisfied. This is globalisation. This is to say you can't cut one country off from another. It's benefiting investors. They can invest on the German exchange in Australia. Fantastic. So number one here is, could Bourse de Montréal, it would be a commercial decision. So that in return, could ASX set up a branch here? I'm sure the answer is going to be yes. Because if they fulfil the requirements there in section 276, well, this actually is the purpose there of regulation. So 276 about the purpose. And I'm sure that Stefan could probably quote me the section number about what would it take for a foreign exchange. I think if they fulfil requirements, they could, couldn't they?
They could. They would have to file for SRO status.
They exist here now or not?
And give a license.
TSE has a branch here, haven't they?
The
Toronto.
The CSX has an office here, but it's not per se a branch. It's
okay.
An office. The NASDAQ, the U.S. NASDAQ used to have a trading platform.
Did that close down to it?
It closed down.
So it was a commercial decision?
It was a commercial decision, but it was recognized as an SRO.
It's just telling us that the securities reg is global. And you look at a country like, second and third world countries, don't need to name them, then who would invest in such a place? You know, you wouldn't trust the system. So it's very much showcasing Canada to the world, showcase Quebec to the world, showcase Australia to the world. And a country like, it's too dangerous to name countries, but countries that are further down the list when it comes to international credibility do not attract investment from other countries, It did not attract world attention. They're losing out. So I guess probably should finish in 10, 15 minutes, but what I'm doing is the highlights of a whole semester course. I'm going to come back for another class tomorrow and we'll do 26 of them. But now, this is just to sort of show that securities reg has something for everybody. Maybe I should just point out here, page 9. Page 10 is checks and balances to say that yes, the bourse can run itself, but it is accountable to the commission. So 4.1 through to 4.20. For my students, I call this Big 20, and they say, "Oh, is Big 20 in the exam this year?" Big 20 is certainly in the exam this year because Big 20 are checks and balances, where you have the self-regulating Toronto Stock Exchange or the self-regulating Bourse de Montréal, or Bourse de Paris, or whatever else. It is self-regulating, but it is answerable. So it is self-regulating as the first line, and it is answerable to the commission. And there are 20 examples there of self-regulation and accountability. And this actually is further on self-regulation. So self-regulation is self-regulation by the exchange. And I found also these different other examples of Canadian examples of self-regulation of the industry. Now what are they doing? They are promoting investor confidence. That 50% of its own shares. We need to know that, and remember, they are competing with other investments. Securities markets are competing with investing in real estate. They are competing with investing in antiques and Rembrandts and Andy Warhols. I mean, that's another place people can invest in. Remember, so these financial markets are competing. They want to attract our money. So even organisations like the Dealers Association, mutual funds dealers, and so on, they're all showing, promoting credibility of the market. Maybe I should move on quickly. Well, I guess I've talked about this. This is the co-regulation of securities markets. There's a Bourse de Montréal, the Venture Exchange, and CNQ. In my system, it's called ASX and SFE. We've done that. So the industry. The industry is, on the one hand, there is dematerialization and there is disintermediation. But remember, it is other people's money. So we need to have confidence that the industry can be trusted. So there's Goldman Sachs Australia. They took over our 150-year-old stockbroker firm, J.B. Weir, now part of Goldman Sachs, but they've kept the name because it has credibility. So Goldman Sachs Australia. Goldman Sachs Canada. Here's Merrill Lynch Canada. It's going global, isn't it? A generation ago, these foreign firms would have been kept away. Don't want foreigners here. They don't speak the language. We don't have foreigners here. They don't understand the culture. It's all moved on. So what was called J.B. Weir, which was an individual 150 years ago, became a partnership, is now an American subsidiary. We don't mind. It just opens investors to more potential. This is where, this is my 5.1. Where the industry, the securities industry, is huge and it is global. And I'll just mention very briefly, it raises issues like conflict, duty of care, negligence, expertise. There are all sorts of ways of ensuring standards in the industry. But the industry is going electronic, so do traditional stockbroker rules apply to TD Waterhouse? which is just a website. And this is a thesis waiting to be written. TD Waterhouse, fiduciary or not? What do you reckon? Is it just a website? Or would TD Waterhouse have all the same rules and expectations of what we call a full service or a human being advisor? Just a website or more? And this question four is what I do with my students, to say that electronic brokers are exactly the same, that there's a duty of care. Behind that screen is a person. And behind that screen is, disclosure. So the disclosure for TD Waterhouse and Merrill Lynch Canada online is exactly the same whether it's a human being or whether it is an electronic broker. So question five there, is an electronic broker fiduciary? Well, the answer actually is it will depend on the relationship between them. So 5.2, 5.3, give me 10 more minutes.
Yeah.
So here's Know Your Client, for example. I haven't actually found Know Your Client in Quebec. Is that Agissement de Bonfoy, 5.5? There's Obligation à l'égard des clients. The American, and I found this on the Ontario Securities Commission. This is the idea that that the advisor has to be aware of their client's purpose, their client's objectives, and to act in the interest of the client. So that's a quotation from the Ontario Securities Commission. To ensure complete information, view, basically to act in the client's interests. And that is really for Stefan again. There's a Know Your Client equivalent. Is it Section 160 or somewhere else?
The KYC rule is subsumed in 160. It's not explicitly phrased.
So would Quebec turn to, say, US jurisprudence on Know Your Client?
Well, we have our own jurisprudence, but at the same time, it's in line with the common law Anglo-American jurisprudence on your client.
There are books like this about Know Your Client. Yes. It's such a big area. So, I mean, that's just there for interest of what the OSC says. And I think I did a good job here by finding Section 160. It's all foreign to me. So if 160 is KYC, that was a good guess. But I'm sure there must be releases from the authority.
The IDA will.
They must have their own.
The Dealers Association regulates the compliance rules anymore.
But the Quebec Securities Commission,
they do not.
They don't have a release on this.
They delegated their powers to the IDA. In this respect, so they only have those broad provisions that cover the suitability and the fine rules.
The American jurisprudence goes back to the original, almost 100 years, about Know Your Client. Almost to the end, insider trading. Can I maybe start with an example from New Zealand? You're thinking, what's that? 4 million people. New Zealand, this is page 14. They have really come alive big time with a major settlement.
Great rugby team, New Zealand.
Don't mention that. We're playing you fairly soon, aren't we?
I think that there is a World Cup now going on.
Absolutely, and Australia plays Canada quite soon.
Yeah. Oh my God. Well, we'll talk about it.
But they're probably mostly Western Canada, aren't they?
Well, I'm not a rugby fan, so. He's old, I think. That's true.
But look, you mentioned the All Blacks. That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've heard the name of their basketball team.
No.
The Tall Blacks. TALL. I mean, it's not bad, is it? Tall Blacks, New Zealand basketball.
Mm-hmm.
They're all 6 foot six. But whether it be the All Blacks or the Tall Blacks.
Yeah.
But they have really been quite big time with insider trading. This is, I'm almost at the end. So insider trading, this is the privatised railway. which apparently was called a Transrail. And it's the classic insider trading of selling before bad news. Directors, those connected with directors, selling shares a few days before releasing bad news. Really dumb. Just really stupid. And you can't do it because everything's electronic, so everything's recorded and everything's known. And the Securities Commission fought them. And after 2 or 3 years, they won. With these payments backed by the railway directors to the New Zealand Commission for $27 million. This is big time in these Commonwealth countries, $27 million settlement. Without admission of liability. And the Commission says they have not admitted any wrongdoing. Who cares? But they're making the payment of the profits back to the government. We did nothing wrong, but here's the money back. So the Commission's saying this is pretty good. This is I'm mentioning New Zealand because this in countries like mine, I think Canada as well, we don't have multi-million dollar insider trading cases. Yeah. Has it been any in Canada or not? We've had insider trading cases. Very difficult to prove.
Very difficult to prove indeed, yeah.
That's difficult to prove. So we can take care of it through cancelling a licence. That can be done administratively. But this New Zealand Commission of $27 million, I think, is a great example. And I just found it on their website a few weeks back. Remember, this is not a court case. This is a commission settlement. And New Zealanders are very proud about this. So insider trading, it is great for the insiders, but it is no good for the reputation. So it is credibility, investor confidence, that is obviously ethics and morality as well, but it is the reputation of the Canadian market, reputation of the New Zealand market. And is that why you would never invest in Indonesia? It can be mentioned because it always ranks very low in credibility. You wouldn't trust Indonesian investments because there's no law enforcement, there's no rule of law, it seems. So insider trading, whether it be trading, advising, tipping, and I know insiders say, well, so what? Well, it is morality, it is ethics. But mostly it is credibility. Am I finished? Oh, here it is, insider trading. In fact, I found a picture for you of Transrail. So this was part of New Zealand selling off government assets. Being Ronald Reagan, Mrs. Thatcher, governments do not run business. So my country, the government sold everything, just about. And here's New Zealand selling off government railway. Wall Street, the movie. You've seen that with this guy in the middle, taken away in handcuffs. Insider trading.
Greed is good.
Absolutely, greed is good. So insider trading, look, the main thing is the effect on the reputation of the marketplace. I can finish up with Organisation Internationale de Commission de Valeur, which was based here in Montreal, wasn't it, until a couple of years back. And I've never known, why did Montreal lose it to Madrid? What happened? What sort of inside deal didn't happen? Was it some inside deal didn't happen? But what an achievement for Montreal to have the OICV here. And I noticed that their big conference is in Paris in 2008 for the international organisation. So, the International Organisation of Securities Commissions is like a United Nations. They've got a great website. They have principles of market regulation, securities regulation. Every country aspires to be a member. Canada has 3 members of OICV, being Quebec, BC, and I think Alberta, from memory. And that's the Canadian nature of the federation with 13 regulators. We have 1 member. US has 1 member. Canada has 3 members. But to be a member is the important thing, because that's the credibility of the regulation system. It is the coming together of these regulators
with working parties, standards. They're what they call the 30 principles. 30 principles of market regulation. So to conclude, probably is time to finish. Security, Latin word, via French. Security means, in English, has two separate meanings. It is like to make you pay with a mortgage, to make you feel comfortable, to give security. But then we have market securities on a financial marketplace. So what can I finish? I can say, grand merci, pour votre attention. What about some questions? Was an interruption. So grand merci pour votre attention. Je regrette que votre part était en anglais. Mais merci beaucoup.
Merci.